Welcome to Day Zero Update for March 16th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew this week, but we have plenty of news to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
As a number of games have been announced, and some are shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
Others are getting some nice bits of success getting announced for that. And let's say there's a couple of stupid stories here. Let's say one of the consoles is getting a dumb feature that I don't know that many people want. Another one, maybe one of your favorite mobile games is getting sold to the Saudis. We'll tell you which one, but before we do all that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here with MLB The Show 25. I got that in the deluxe edition, so I can start playing it early on Friday, and have been enjoying it a lot. I put maybe about 20 hours into it so far, and have been enjoying it. It's got a number of improvements and changes and such that are well received. I think really liking a lot of this stuff here. For Diamond Dynasty, the big stuff may not be super obvious until later in the year, but the big thing is they've gotten rid of seasons and what else did they get rid of? They got rid of the I think some of the FOMO stuff to it,
mm-hmm.
where for the seasons, that basically means all the like bonus type cards, like you get a veteran series or rookie series versions of players and all these other extra card types, those things will not essentially become unusable after a certain period of time. In years past, those you would hit, I think they would usually have like three or four seasons over the course of the next year. And you would just have cards that just wouldn't be usable in the like main multiplayer modes. There may mm-hmm. be more casual stuff where you could use whatever. But they've already kind of implemented this in last year's game
mm-hmm.
Over the past couple of months, where you can hop on and just make your team out of any good players that you have or whatever you need to complete. The programs, which are sort of little, I would say little like versions of like battle passes, but they're all free to get. Some of them might require cards, which you'll have to usually have some means of getting them.
Mm-hmm.
But then they'll be available and you can start earning, you know, extra experience for your accounts or credits or additional packs you can unlock or open up and other cards you can unlock, that kind of stuff that just gives you kind of a lot of more stuff to collect. I still have the collection stuff. I think with some minor tweaks here and there for that. So it's not really, that part's not really too different. But yeah, it's kind of the program stuff that they've changed up a bit. So now instead of it just adding tons of these programs, they have a lot of long-term ones. It seems like the ones for the specific teams, the team mm-hmm. affinity programs are all kind of centered around long-term playing. So it'd be like, get X amount of hits with players from this team and then Y amount of hits, you know, I go up to like 2,000 hits total with players from that team. And it's like, okay, this is going to be something you're going to build for a while instead of it being like, well, after 30 days, you know, screw you if you didn't get this done. You got to start over again, which can be annoying for this kind of stuff. But they got that and they have ones that are just for stats of all your players for essentially anything you're doing in Diamond Dynasty so that you can earn rewards and such out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of just building up a lot more rewards for things versus just looking through a bunch of lists of things you need to do and kind of writing down lists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what kind of lineups you need to have to maximize your time in mm-hmm. the mode. There is still some of that, but that's kind of a thing you can kind of do a little more casually, I guess, versus kind of the way it felt like it was requiring in previous years. So that kind of stuff is a nice change of pace. The one nice thing that they have added to Diamond Dynasty mode is a new single player game you can play, which is, I'd say, similar to the Conquest mode, which was sort of an XCOM-ish kind of mode, where you're capturing territory, taking on challenges and such. This one's called Diamond Quest. Essentially, kind of like a board game kind of thing, where you are rolling dice, rolling a die, whatever number is, how many spaces you can move, and you'll run into challenges on the board. And you're usually trying to get from one side of the board to the other, but it's not linear like a, you know, Monopoly or whatever. It's more a grid of spaces, so you're kind of trying to get to the end without this like boss, this boss like piece that is chasing you around. Which isn't too hard, at least the first run I did in it, managed to get to the end. Had a few challenges, most of which were like, oh, get a hit or not get a run, that kind of stuff. I'm assuming there's going to be more challenging ones, but once I got to the end, it was just this quick 3-inning game against this team and try to win, that kind of thing with your Diamond Dynasty team. So and it's kind of a roguelite mode. So it, as you complete these challenges, you get rewards, maybe packs or stuff like that that will be in your inventory. And then you have to finish that sort of final challenge to be able to cash out and keep that stuff. So there's a bit of a risk reward there for that. So it's a nice little change of pace for that, and it's a pretty quick thing. It was maybe like 20-30 minutes to do a whole run, so it wasn't too bad. But that's kind of mostly it there for Diamond Dynasty. As for the rest of the game, I mostly played Road to the Show, the career mode. Made a first baseman and kind of ran through some of the early game stuff, which is where a lot of the changes are, because instead of in the past few years, you would have essentially kind of like a combine kind of thing going on, where you're playing a handful of games to determine like what your how good your player or how wanted your player would be for the draft. And you could let the game pick a random team for you to join wherever you're getting drafted, or you can pick a specific team and they will draft you wherever, whatever round you're going to be going in. Here you start off with a player that's in high school, and you're doing sort of your state tournaments at the end of your high school career. And with each game you do, you get recruited by colleges. There's, I think, just eight total colleges, so it's not too many there. But you'll see stats for like, oh, these schools, you know, have higher stats for actual skill development versus sort of publicity, getting your name out there. I don't know how varied it is, because it's like 3 stars to 5 stars, so it wasn't like one of them. Like any of them were all trash or anything. And also, if you do go to the college, one of the colleges, you automatically get to the College Baseball World Series tournament. So it's not like you're stranded in obscurity or anything with any of these schools. But yeah, once you're done with the high school games, then you get the opportunity to go to the MLB Combine, because if you don't know, in baseball, you can go pro out of high school and get drafted. But if you decide not to go to the pros, you then have to go to at least 3 years of college baseball before you're eligible for the draft again. And so they kind of have that built in here, where before you go after the combine, before the draft, you pick one of the teams that has recruited you to commit to.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get additional teams recruiting you during the combine stuff.
Yeah.
Which is just 4 days of, you do like drills to determine like stat stuff, like how good you are at certain stat, or certain like ability stuff. Depending on whether you're, you know, batter or pitcher, that's a little bit different there. And then you play up to 3 days worth of games.
Mm-hmm.
I made a pitcher and they just pitched one game under 3 days. So that was kind of an interesting thing to see. But yeah, you commit to a college and then you go through the draft and see like where you go. And my batter got drafted in like the fourth round, I think. So I ended up going to LSU for their program, and essentially just zooms you ahead to 3 years later. I don't know if it's, I don't think it goes 3 years into the future as far as the specific time frame. I assume it's setting it in such a way that you are always playing in 2025 season,
yeah,
when you go to college or the pros first.
So mm-hmm.
That's maybe the weird little bit there. But yeah, if you go to the college, you're kind of doing similar to the tournament in the high school stuff, where you are playing a few games, facing off against one of the other teams, because it's only eight teams, so it's not that much variety there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you don't know, the in those in high school and college, they use aluminum bats.
Mm-hmm.
So they have all the nice things and such of the bats hitting the baseballs.
Yeah.
And all that. That's a fun little thing there. And yeah, you try to, you know, win it. And my team managed to win. And so going into the draft, I ended up getting drafted, I think, fourth overall in the first round. So that was a nice surprise. You're generally trying to figure out like, oh, is there a chance I can go higher than this? Or, cause if you go high in the draft, probably at least first or second, round, you have a chance of being what they call fast tracked, though I don't know that they even surface it really, other than being a fourth overall pick. I assume I am going to be pushed up quicker, so I could maybe get to the majors within my maybe second season. I don't know, but I haven't. Mm-hmm. I'm still in April, so I've not necessarily gotten far enough to see exactly how quickly that can be, but they keep mentioning it, so I assume that's a whole part of it. But yeah, then once you get to the pros, you kind of do what you've done in the past, where you start in AA, play games there, do all that fun stuff. They have more dynamic challenges here, as I've seen like a few, usually get a few per game, depending on if you're pitcher or batter or the situations that pop up, which can get you like bonus XP and that kind of stuff. The other big change they've made is that progression in Road to the Show is different. In the past, like handful of years, it was kind of an RPG kind of system where based on how well you played or how poorly you played, you would get more or less XP or maybe even demerits for bad plays, you know, swinging at bad pitches and all that kind of stuff. That all your stats would just go up and down accordingly, automatically.
Mm.
And they've changed that a bit here. So you get all the bonus and demerit stuff, but it pulls into just an overall experience points. As you see at the end of every game, and then it runs you know, through a meter, and essentially every 100 XP you get a token, and then that token you can spend on upgrading your stats manually, which they have them divided up into categories, so that if you put points into a category, it upgrades all of the stats in it at the same rate. But if you want certain stats to go up faster, you can just drill down and upgrade the stats individually if you want.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of get more control over what you want to improve not necessarily have to rely on situations to present themselves to let you improve those stats and such. So it's kind of a more direct feeling of improvement.
Yeah.
Versus the way it's been in recent years for that stuff. So that's nice. And that's kind of basically how it used to be for probably like the PS2 and PS3 generations, where that was kind of the main way you did it. And you could definitely exploit it at a certain point. I remember having like first basemen that were really good at stealing bases and getting around the field pretty quickly in ways like most first basemen are not this agile and this fast. Because if they were, they would be over in the other side of the diamond on third base or second base or something. So yeah, there's a lot of that kind of stuff to it in the old games, but here it's a bit more fair, and you can also spend those tokens on the perks, the new perks they have here.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the past few years, those were kind of card stuff you would unlock in Diamond Dynasty. But here they are things that pop up every so often. It might have to be through situational things that you find. Because I've had two of them with my pitcher pop up when I was in pitching situations that I hadn't seen otherwise. Or no, that was my first baseman. And you can spend tokens on those. I think you get and it's essentially like a mini skill tree. Essentially, the ones I've seen have four parts. Four sections, but you're spending points at three different points in there to decide like additional stats or like whatever you're adding to this perk. So you might have one that just gives you a better chance of getting hits in batter-friendly pitch counts that you can morph to be like, oh, it would only benefit you at home games, but you can morph it to be like, okay, this can help you in any game, whether you're away or home, or you can have it morph it to benefit you at different pitch counts, that kind of thing. And you're spending tokens on that. And there's three different sections of this that you're spending tokens, and it increases from what I've seen, like six tokens for the first evolution, that's eight for the second, and like 10 for the third kind of thing to max it out. And you can spend tokens to change them if you want, if you realize like, oh, this is probably not what I want for this perk. So there's that adds some extra ways of boosting stats or helping you out in certain kinds of situations. That is a nice little change, because previously they were just kind of cards that would add attribute points to your character. And, you know, those are random drops, and essentially that just a little just too random to it. And then the last part is the equipment has changed a little bit. It's mostly the same, but this time around, instead of those giving you like stat boosts for your attributes, it seems like it always just boosts your perks by X percent, maybe like 2% or 4% or 6%, depending on if it's like a, you know, bronze, silver, gold equipment item kind of thing. So that's an additional thing they have going on. But outside of that, that's kind of all largely the same as in previous years. You know, you have sessions for doing little training things every week, so you can boost some stats or get extra tokens that way. And you're trying to, you know, play well and get recognized for All-Star Game stuff and all that kind of stuff, so that you can potentially get promoted more quickly. Yeah, not really too much different there. Kind of like what else? I believe they've in a franchise mode have changed up how the free agent logic works, kind of make it more of a bidding system like it's kind of is in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Though I haven't played franchise yet, because I typically wait until the season starts, so the rosters are more accurate versus the way they are right now, which is more in spring training mode, where there's just a bunch of people on the team that may or may not make it for opening day. And I'm trying to think what else there. There's gameplay they've changed. If you use the cursor-based batting system, they've added a new thing called ambush hitting, where you push the right stick left or right to, you know, predict if you're, if the pitch is going to go inside the plate or outside the plate. And if you guess correctly, or it doesn't really change anything based on how you're guessing. It just basically makes it so that if you, whichever side you pick, the cursor is going to grow on the side that you're picking for, assuming the ball will go in that side of the plate, and the other side it shrinks. So you're kind of making it harder if you guess wrong, that kind of stuff. I've given that a shot trying to get the hang of it, but it's just, it's not a thing that works well for me. The cursor based batting stuff. So I've turned it off after, giving it like 10, 15 games worth of trying it. So that's that one. And, I think that's about it. So yeah, that's a game that's doing a lot of work to improve things. It maybe hasn't made any super big flashy changes, but I don't know that it necessarily has to. It's probably one of the best sports games out there. And I feel like one that's more user player friendly with a lot of things it's doing, because it has, you know, cross save stuff, so you can move your save between platforms. And I don't think EA or 2K do that with any of their games. As well as their Diamond Dynasty mode transfers across platforms, and I'm pretty sure McMahon Ultimate Team does not transfer progress between platforms or anything, so you would have to spend as much time and money again if you move to a new platform. You know, say if it shows up on a subscription service or something, you would have to start over. Whereas I think MLB The Show kind of lets that be a better system for people, and like they have dynamic difficulty system that's, you know, makes things a little bit harder or easier depending on how well you're playing at that moment, which is pretty nice, versus having to mess with sliders and try to figure out like what the best one is for you. But yeah, that's MLB The Show 25. It'll be out on Tuesday for everybody, but it's available for early access right now. So there's that. Been playing some more Rocket League as the season ended and the new season started. Been enjoying that a lot so far. They had a new arena. The Rocket Pass has a new car in it, which is like a Dodge Charger that looks pretty nice, controls pretty well. Not really too much else to say about that. They just put out an update alongside this new season that seems to add a decent bit of new stuff to it. They've added more modifiers if you want to play local multiplayer stuff or play against bots or whatever. More things to make it act weird and unusual. So that's fun. So yeah, there's that. And last one I'm putting some time into is Mini Shoot Adventures. I've been making more progress and better progress in that game now. As I mentioned before, it's a Zelda-ish kind of like 2D dual stick shooter kind of thing with your little ship that is going around shooting out, you know, taking out enemies and all that kind of stuff. It was kind of in a point where I could see on the map like where I'm supposed to go, but then it's blocked off by something and kind of being lost as to where I'm supposed to go to unlock the blockage, that kind of stuff. And now I've hit a point where I think I'm over the peak over the hump on trying to get some momentum in this game. As now I have a new ability that is like I forget what they call it. It's basically like a super shot, essentially, that can break walls that have cracks in them, and break up rocks and that kind of stuff, which I've been seeing a lot of blockages and such with that. So now I finally have the thing that lets me explore more versus looking around in the same areas over and over again and be like, where did I not go previously? Especially with the way the map system is set up, where you can explore off the map that's visible to you, but you have to find a specific like piece of map to unlock it.
Yeah.
That kind of thing where it's like, okay, I'm kind of blindly guessing where I'm going, which obviously doesn't help when you're trying to figure out how to get around obstacles and such. So, yeah, I'm in a much better place now, and we'll probably have more momentum to actually get back in and keep playing and making some actual progress to this. So, yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So, how about you, Brandon?
As for me, the game I've been playing mostly this week is Wonderstop. This is a new game that was made by the makers of the Stanley Parable, and it's basically like a cozy game where you help run a tea shop out in the middle of this forest. That is like the extent of what the actual gameplay is. There's a tea shop you're doing. Prepare the materials for the tea, the ingredients, then you make the tea in this large tea machine, and then you serve it to guests who come in, then they, you know, that's pretty much it. But there's a lot more like going on underneath the surface, because again, this is made by the people who do the Stanley Parable, so as you can imagine, there's a lot of other mechanics happening that you aren't seeing. One of the basic story here is that you're playing this girl named Alta, and Alta is a professional fighter in this fictional universe, and she's basically been like a number one, like a big top champion for years and years, until she goes on this losing streak, and so she becomes convinced that she needs to seek out this legendary master fighter that could train her to make her better. And so she goes, runs out into the middle of this forest where the master warrior lives. And she gets to a point where it's like, she starts slowing down. She gets really sluggish. And then she has to like start dragging her sword behind her to the point that it gets to the point that the sword is so heavy she literally cannot pick it up. And she just eventually passes out, like just collapses in the middle of the forest. And then she comes to, and she's sitting on this like park bench next to this guy named Boro, who found her in the forest and sort of took her to Wonderstop, which is the name of the tea shop that he runs. And Boro himself is basically the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man if he was human, and maybe Eastern European. He has this weird sort of diction that makes it, that suggests he has some kind of accent. But he's like, "Look, you definitely are in need of some time to rest and recuperate and recover. Why don't you just sort of stay here and help me?" You know, work my tea shop, and you know, when you're ready to go, you're well enough to fight again, you can leave. And she says, "All right, fine." So he teaches her how everything works, and you know, every so often people will wander into the clearing and they'll go to the shop, you'll serve them tea, then that'll happen, and then they'll eventually, what'll happen is that all the NPCs in the immediate area will just stop talking to you. And I mean that literally, like you'll go up to them and it's just like dot, 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 dot. And that basically means that you have to go to this little shrine that's in the middle of the clearing to sit down and sort of, essentially it's like this weird sort of ethereal experience where she has like visions and stuff. And it slowly starts to like reveal like what's actually going on underneath the surface, because turns out she's blocked a lot of stuff out of her memory because of how traumatic it was. The game itself is like the actual like gameplay. Like I said, there's like you got to make the tea, and of course the first thing you got to do is you got to get the tea leaves to make tea. So the tea leaves grow on these green bushes that pop up randomly all over the clearing, and so you go out there and collect them in a basket, then you come back, put them into this this leaf drying apparatus, and then after a while it turns into little tea balls that you then use to make the tea. And then there's the machine where you have to pour the water and then heat it up and then pipe it over to the pitcher, then toss the ingredients into the pitcher, then pipe it over to the server where you then, you know, pour it out onto a cup. For the record, the machine that you use to make and serve this tea is like a Dr. Seuss invention. It's got all kinds of wobbly connector bits, and it's like two stories tall. There's like five steps that you have to do it. And then on top of that, you know, instead of just the tea, I mean, you can serve just the tea, but a lot of people will also want, you know, additional things to it. So there's also this gardening mechanic that is involved where you go out and you plant, you take seeds, and in this case, seeds are like bigger, or like the size of a human head, and you just punch them into the ground and they just instantly grow a plant. And everything in the gardening part sort of works on like a hexagon grid pattern. If you plant like three like seeds in a row, the third one will then turn into a plant egg, which you then have to water, and it will turn into what they call a small hybrid. And that small hybrid is how you get more seeds of that type. But then in order to get what's called a large hybrid, you then plant them in like a triangular formation and then put one final seed in the middle, in the center of the triangle formation. It can be the same seeds, it can be a different seed, and then that'll turn into a plant egg, and it will become a large hybrid, and that is basically a plant that gives you fruits. And those fruits essentially act as a secondary ingredient for the tea that you make, and they all come in like all types of flavors. Some of them taste kind of like mint, some of them taste like ice cream, some of them have no taste at all, but are pleasant. And there's like additional stuff like mushrooms that you can also throw in there too. There's like a whole bunch of mushrooms growing. And yeah, that's like the whole tea making process. And there's like other stuff, like you can sweep up leaf piles or cut weeds. And trust me, the weeds can show up very fast and like take over a whole area really quickly if you're not careful. The actual game, like I said, it's a cozy game, and it is absolutely like the most low stakes gameplay possible. You know, the whole thing goes at your pace. You know, yeah, customers will come and they'll make requests, but they're infinitely patient. You know, they never get impatient or get angry at you. You can literally just do the whole thing at your leisure. There's no timetable whatsoever to do. You only do things when you want to move the plot along and not a moment sooner. And yeah, it's like a really super chill game. And it's also like super funny too. The people who come into this tea shop are just a weird gaggle of characters. There's this one guy who is really, really trying to impress his son, so he decided to steal some knight's armor and inadvertently cursed himself, and now it's slowly taking him over, but he refuses to admit that it exists. There's this one part where like this trio of like corporate dudes like that all have vaguely the same name, like Harry, Larry, and Jerry, I think, who show up basically almost exactly alike with briefcases, and they're all requesting coffee. Yeah, just a bunch of funny and weird characters. The thing is, though, what makes this game even especially unique is the place that it takes place in, the clearing. The forest setting itself basically doesn't really work on the same rules of like time and space that, you know, the rest of this universe does. So every time, you know, when people come in and then they leave, it may seem like they've only been gone like a few minutes, but for them it might have been like 3 weeks to a month. Even sometimes even longer. And every time that it comes to the point where you have to consult the shrine, the whole clearing changes. Like, things change location, new things start cropping up, the sky changes, the season changes. It's like it's ever changing. And yeah, it's a surprisingly really addictive game for how simple it is, it somehow manages to find ways to keep you playing. But yeah, that's been like my primary playing that I've been doing. I'm hoping on, I'm going to be starting my review for that probably tomorrow and hopefully have it up on the website by the end of the week. The other game I've been playing is Shadows of Doubt. And this is a, this is one of those games that kind of became really huge through word of mouth simply because of how ambitious it was. It's essentially a randomly generated sort of detective game where you're this private investigator who's hired to find out like a murder murders. And basically what'll happen is someone will die. There will be a murder that will be reported. You'll be asked to find find who the murderer is. So you have to go to their place and locate, get evidence, collect evidence. Sometimes you have to follow or shadow a suspect, you know, do interviews and then, you know, collect all the evidence and then finally make a choice. The whole game is built on voxels. So it's got this sort of weird sort of blocky texture to it. And it's also broken as all hell, which is what makes it so fun. There's like a part early on in the game where you can basically make it so that you are impervious to fall damage, even if you jump off the top of the highest side scraper in the game. But yeah, it's a really good game. It's one of those games you could probably play forever if you wanted to. Also just trying to find new ways to break it is part of the fun. But yeah, those are the games I've been playing.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some news. First up here, we have the PlayStation Plus game catalog for March. That'll be going live here on Tuesday. We got some nice stuff here, for people that have not played some of these games. Yeah, let's see here. We got first up for Extra and Premium. There's UFC 5 for the PS5, the latest of the EA UFC games. So if you like that, there's some of that you can check out. Let's see, for PS4 and PS5, Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown.
Yeah, I've been hearing about that game. I need to try that.
Yeah, well, you'll be able to try it out on Tuesday.
Yep.
This is a very good Metroid-y kind of game. Set in like an alternate, maybe a side story kind of thing. As you're playing as one of these immortals, Sargon, who is trying to unravel a big conspiracy that is happening and going through a place that has had a lot of time corruption and all this. So, yeah, it's a very fun game. Very combat-heavy game. For that, so keep an eye on that for this week. Let's see, for PS4, Captain Tsubasa Rise of New Champions.
Yep.
Which is one of the Bandai Namco games based on an anime, a soccer anime, so.
Which is in turn based on like one of the most popular manga that ever ran in Shonen Jump.
Yeah. And so this kind of holds in a lot of that absurd anime arcadey action into the game.
Yep.
I've heard it's a pretty good time.
It is.
So yeah, that's one you can check out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. For more anime stuff for PS4 and PS5, Mobile Suit Gundam Battle Operation Code Fairy.
Yep.
This is, I don't know which one it's set for. It says Universal Century 0079.
Yeah, so this would be like, hold on, I gotta like go through my Gundam road note here.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that's like, that's like the OG Gundam timeline.
Okay.
So like that's taking place like right around the time that war, the main war is happening, and looks like you're playing Zeon. Yeah, you're playing Zeon forces.
Yeah.
So you're basically playing space Nazis.
Yeah. As they mentioned here, in order to break through the deteriorating war situation in the North American continent, the Noisy Fairy, a secret unit under the direct control of Caecilia, of the Principality of Zeon and led by Alma, pushing forward in the 1-year war against the Earth Federation forces. So yeah. the big single player game. So
yeah, that's Kaecilia. That's Kaecilia Zabi. She's the daughter of not Zabi. God damn it! Are they called the Zabi dynasty? Yeah, the family that took over the Republic of Zeon and turned it into a dictatorship. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And, yeah, so that's, she's like the Emperor Zabi's daughter, one of like four children, I think. It's been a while since I've seen it, but
yeah. So yeah, there's a Gundam game you can play.
Yeah. Yeah. It says here it's the middle of the 1 year war. So yeah, this is straight out of the OG Gundam timeline.
All right. So yeah, there you go for that. Let's see, for PS4 and PS5, Arcade Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of my favorite games a few years ago. Basically a game where you run a laundromat that you get from your dad because you've, I think, quit college, something like that. And
mm-hmm.
he is saddling you with this while he goes and does his thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's voiced by the voice actor that does Geralt.
Yeah.
I think his name is Gerald, so they're dealing with that. And you were running this laundromat and kind of building out a secret arcade in the back and doing, you know, day-to-day tasks, mostly grabbing people's laundry, tossing them into washing machines, and then switching them over to dryers,
mm-hmm.
setting them up for people to get their stuff done and get out of here while others go and play in the arcades and manage those machines and take out the coins when you need to, because they can fill up. And you also get daily tasks for doing different things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's kind of one of those games where you kind of keep doing stuff until you can buy some upgrades that might make things a little easier and upgrade your space for your arcade and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And buy more machines, all that kind of fun stuff. It's a nice like management sim of sorts, but you can also just go play arcade games and all that as well. So there's that. That's one to check out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, for PS4 and PS5, Bang On Balls Chronicles. This is 3D platformer,
yep.
and action game. So there's that, but you are playing as a bunch of balls that are bouncing mm-hmm. around.
It's right there in the title.
Yeah, though the title reminds me of like a Bungo game.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to see if there's one that's it's just similar to Bungo, mm-hmm. which is a Dreamcast treasure game that got a few sequels or spinoffs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a Bang On Balls Chronicles. That one you can check mm-hmm. out. Let's see. Then there's for PS4 and PS5, You Suck at Parking.
Yeah.
And this is basically a game where you are driving your vehicle around in parking lots to avoid obstacles and
yep.
park in specific places.
I think Game Grumps did a episode on this one.
Yeah, maybe. It was on Game Pass a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a very good game, so one you can check out if you want your very challenging, like, leaderboard kind of game for that. And then, let's see, for PS4 and PS5, Siberia, The World Before.
Oh, yeah.
This is an adventure game.
Yep.
From a series that is highly acclaimed.
Oh, yeah. I've got the first two. I've got the first two Siberia games right here on my computer.
Yeah, this seems to be the fourth installment now.
Yeah, there's only the first two came out like in the early 2000s, and then there was like a third one that came out in 2017, I think. Sometime around there, and this is like the most recent one, which is cool because the creator of these games, I think he passed away a couple years ago.
Yeah. So yeah, this is one you can check out if you want your adventure game fix.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for extra and premium. Here's the premium exclusive ones. The VR game is Arcade Paradise VR. So
mm-hmm.
much like I said earlier, this is that, but you are the one walking around and playing the games and doing all the stuff yourself. So, fun time. Let's see, for the retro stuff here. This is the stuff that was announced in the State of Play a month or so ago. It's arcade for PS4 and PS5. There's Armored Core, the original, which was a PS1 game.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe these are the ones that were published by Sony back then. So there's that. There's Armored Core, Project Phantasma. I think this is an expansion of sorts? This might be a sequel. They seem to have released two of them in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that can't be in their two separate games. But then there's Armored Core, Master of Arena.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems to be more of a combat challenge kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you encounter the arena. Your skills are put to the test against numerous AC pilots and all that. So, I don't know. But there's some more Armor Core you could check out, especially these are the very first games in the series, which probably means they are challenging to play.
Mm.
Considering how much things have changed in controls for these kind of games since then. So that'll be fun to check out and see like how those have turned out, how they hold up for that. So there you go. There's your lineup for PS Plus game catalog. So yeah, mm-hmm. got some very nice stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A good variety here, at least.
Oh yeah. Let's see. Obviously the Siberia game is absolutely going to get it. Probably gonna mess around with Arcade Paradise as well, because I mean it's an arcade simulator with a bunch of arcade games you can actually play. I mean that's just really cool. But then of course you got all these Armored Core games too.
Yeah,
I'm definitely gonna play those.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a pretty solid lineup, is what I gotta say.
Yeah. So there you go. Let's see. Now we're going to start getting some dates and such. We got news that a new Picross game is coming out the week after that, on March 27th. This is Picross S Doraemon and F Characters Edition.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going vulgar. They just had to put F characters.
Yep.
I think this is F for, they call it the world of Fujiko F. Fujio?
Yeah, Fujiko F. Fujio, the guy who created Doraemon.
Yeah, so those are probably various characters outside of just Doraemon stuff.
Yeah,
so.
He had a bunch of other really popular manga that he published during his lifetime. Doraemon was the one that he was most famous for, but he put out a bunch of other stuff, too. I know there was, and frankly, I will admit a lot of them had a very sort of similar formula to what Doraemon was, which is kid comes across magical being that can do inventions. That's basically it. And he had a bunch of those. So yeah, they definitely got a bunch of stuff here. And I think if I'm looking at this picture, yeah, those are some of them. Right there in the picture, there's Pa Man, the guy with the mask and the cape. I forgot what the girl is, but she's like a psychic girl. She was like from a Shonen Sunday comic. The little robot dude down here in the lower center. Yeah, these are all, and of course there's Doraemon with the little propeller hat on, and yeah, that's all Fujiko F. Fujio stuff.
Yeah, I think I had lost the plot on the name of this thing, because now that I look at it, I know this, but yeah. Like in my mind, I thought of Domo-kun.
Yeah, I get
as
it.
Doraemon has like, well, wait, that's not the weird brown monster thing.
No, Doraemon's the blue cat robot with things in his little pouch.
Yeah, all these characters that have like propellers on them.
Yeah, and he doesn't have any ears, you may notice.
Yeah. Well, neither does Domo-kun, so.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, I'm trying to, remember how he lost his ears. Because There's like a plot point, because I think the he was like a time traveling robot, and I think because he lost his ears, that's why he can't go back to his own time, or it might have something to do with like his battery life or something. I can't remember. It's been some years.
Yeah. But yeah, this is going to be an anime themed Picross game where you got a bunch of these characters and whatnot you're doing. That'll be out March 27th for $10.99. So I may check that out. We'll see. Yeah, so there you go. That's a new Picross game. Let's get to some unfortunate news here. A game that just came out, Spectre Divide, is going to be shutting down in 30 days or less than 30 days at this point. This is one. It's weird. They don't have a date. They're just like, it's going to shut down in 30 days. And it's like, usually you put a date, maybe a time. I believe the studio is also shutting down. They may have already shut down. I'm not sure. Yeah, they just launched 2 weeks ago, I think, in 1.0. I think the Steam version was in early access for a bit. But as they've mentioned here, they've had 400,000 players play it. The peak concurrent count of about 10,000 across all platforms. But as time has gone on, we haven't seen enough active players and incoming revenue to cover the day-to-day costs of Spectre Divide and the studio. So, yeah, they are going to be shutting down the game and as well as the studio, which is wild to have. Like, I literally just downloaded this a couple of weeks ago because I was like, oh, this is on here now, so I can play it more easily. And haven't had a chance to start it up, and now the game's shutting down. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's weird. And they even still have paid for, like, ad spots on the PlayStation Store that still show up. And I'm like, well, that's a bit awkward. To still be kind of effectively advertising a game that's going to be dying pretty soon. It is weird that they haven't put a specific date, but I assume they'll probably announce that here shortly. But yeah, it's not a huge surprise. It seems like a game that had some promise for what it was doing, because it's kind of a more tactical shooter kind of thing. It also has had some weird stuff going on with it, because I believe the streamer Shroud had a vested interest in this game, spent some money on it to be like a mouthpiece for the game, a spokesperson, I guess, of sorts. And the game just hasn't paid off in any way, so that's some money down the drain. But yeah, just one of those sad situations. But you still got a couple weeks here to play it, so
yeah.
Time to check it out and see at least what it was before it goes away. So there you go.
Yep.
So there you go. Let's see here. We got the Humble Games showcase happened last week, and we got a few things here in the on the outline here. Particularly the one of the bigger announcements is that Monaco 2 will be coming out in April for PC, PS5, and Xbox Series X and S. The sort of cooperative heist sequel will be, I don't think they have a date yet, just it'll be out in April, so probably announce a specific date once they're locked down, but yeah, that could be a cool game. The original game was very popular for a while, and though that was quite a long time ago, if I'm remembering correctly, yeah, that's 2013, so that's 12 years old for that. But yeah, it did very well, I believe. Sold pretty well as well, and you know, did all that. So yeah, that's neat. But yeah, I'm curious to see what the new one's doing to evolve things a bit. I think they are doing more 3D here to it, whereas the original was kind of a top down 2D game of sorts. So yeah, that could be neat. We'll see how it does.
Yeah, we'll see.
Let's see. Next up here, we got Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tactical Takedown will finally be out on May 22nd. This is the Strange Scaffold game, taking the kind of G general mechanics of a beat-em-up, like a Turtles beat-em-up, mm-hmm. and adapting that for a turn-based strategy game, which works a lot better than you might expect.
Yeah.
They do a good job of giving you the right kind of abilities and such that kind of get you bouncing around the level a good bit to take out enemies. And you should be able to take out at least a few enemies in a turn for that. And, you know, have ways for the stage to kind of push you along as it just literally disappears if you are not moving forward too much. You also have lives if you are getting beat up a bunch, so kind of working your way around that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, that looks really cool, and yeah, I'm looking forward to this. This will be out May 22nd. So yeah, that'll be cool. See, a nice new take on the Ninja Turtles.
Oh yeah.
So we've had a bunch that are just beat 'em ups or action games.
Yeah, I totally. Time to do something a little different.
Yeah, and as we've seen, Nickelodeon's not shy about licensing out the Turtles.
I mean the original holders weren't, the original creators weren't exactly have any problem with licensing out the Turtles.
Yeah, but I feel like in games they're on a whole nother level.
Oh yeah, that's 100% true.
They've been a ton of free-to-play games and such, live service games. They've been in Fortnite, I think Call of Duty, I think World of Tanks is the most recent place I've seen them pop up in. And I'm like, wait, what? And it's like skins for tanks that are kind of like turtle shells on them. And I'm like, okay, I didn't realize this game gotten stupid at some point, but you know. There you go for that kind of fun stuff. So, yeah, there you go. New Turtles game coming out in about 2 months. And yeah, as I mentioned earlier, there is. Oh, wait, I got the wrong article here. I'll pull this one up real quick. At least if this one will search it real quick. Yeah, we got another game that's shutting down. Okay, I got it right here. Star Wars Hunters. We'll be shutting down here on October 1st. This is the mobile and Switch game. And I think it also has a PC version, or maybe they were working on a PC version at some point. Or no, they just released the PC version on in January. So, great timing, Zynga. But yeah, as they mentioned here, they're putting out the final content update for it on all platforms April 15th. It'll remain playable until October 1st when the game's online servers will be shut down. So yeah, they got other dates here. March 25th is when Season 5 will be extended by 3 weeks. We'll rerun events and shop bundles from the season. And the rank season will also be extended, giving players more time to hit Kyber 1 rank. April 15th is the final content update. They'll be released for free, and in-game purchases will be disabled across all platforms. I was like, yeah, don't be buying anything in this game.
Seriously.
Shutting it down. I don't know why they're not disabling that immediately and waiting a whole month for it. I'm guessing so they can bilk more money out of people that are maybe unsuspecting of what's going on.
Yeah.
So that's annoying. But yeah, that's Star Wars Hunters, a game that got announced back in... Boy, when did this first get announced? I think it got announced for Switch quite a while ago. Yeah, 4 years ago for the Switch. February 17th, 2021. And it took them until last year to get it out. So it was like a good 3 years of waiting for that. So, yeah, not great. And then shutting it down effectively in about a year. As far as console people are going, and PC people have had even less time. I had like 2 months to enjoy it before it got shut down, and yeah, not a great time for questionable live service games.
Yeah.
That aren't hitting any sort of mainstream sort of audience.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen over the last couple of years that the whole live service model is in a state of rapid contraction. And this is basically just another one of the victims of that.
Yeah. And I'm assuming part of this is probably also the Star Wars license is not a cheap license.
Oh, especially. No, that costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
And seems like it's not doing well on, let's say, mobile. And then obviously not going to do well on Switch, because I remember grabbing this when it came out and being starting it up before I was going to bed. And it's like, oh, you need to log in with your Zynga account. I was like, well, I'm not playing it then. Because I'm not going to sit here in the middle of the night, sign up for an account, and figure out how to do all that when I'm trying to enjoy something before bed. That's a whole thing. So yeah, that's the end of our dates here. We do have some more stuff going on, like the Triple I initiative, that has been announced, a new showcase. They had one last year and they're doing a new one. I don't think they have a date for this yet. Yeah, it's just coming soon. They're going to be announcing at some point. Might be in the next month or two. We'll see as, we start getting closer to the Summer Game Fest festivities. So, yeah, we'll have to see how that all ends up happening. But, yeah, this is one that focuses on indie games and from a lot of the bigger indie studios. As I believe they mentioned here, that they are going to feature The Alters, Deep Rock Galactic, Rogue Core, which I believe is a roguelite first-person shooter thing in the world of Deep Rock Galactic. Endless mm-hmm. Legend 2, Enshrouded, No, I'm Not a Human, and more games. So,
yep.
Yeah, that'll be fun to see.
Mm-hmm.
What new indie stuff they got to announce. So, hopefully it's not too far off.
Yeah, we'll see.
Let's see, what else do we have here? Oh, yeah, this is the most surprising news of the week for me, because it makes sense in hindsight for them to announce it, because... Future Lab here announced Power Wash Simulator 2.
Yep.
That'll be out later this year for PS5, Xbox, and PC.
Yeah.
Makes sense because I had noticed like pretty recently, like they haven't put out a content roadmap update in a bit for whatever's coming out after the Wallace and Gromit DLC, which they did put out after they announced this. And they've got two more updates coming for that game later this year.
Yeah.
But Power Simulator 2 is going to be happening, and that's great to see. It'll likely be coming to the Switch 2 at some point, but
yeah,
as they've said, they don't have any current firm plans. I imagine might not have a dev kit yet or have the ability to talk about games yet for the Switch 2 in any definitive way.
Yeah.
They basically talk about this as an evolution of what they did in the first game. It's set a few years later, after all the wild events of that first game. I believe they have, 38 new stages, new jobs. You'll have a home base to return to that you can use your currency to buy furniture and decorations and such for it. It also can act as a lobby of sort for co-op stuff. So you can hang out there between jobs that you're doing. I believe in the co-op, you can also have shared campaign progress so that people can more easily jump in and out to help you out with jobs.
Yeah.
For that. So that's nice. In the first game, they essentially separated out the co-op completely from the main campaign. So you kind of have different progress there.
Yeah.
For that. And I don't think they just unlock everything up front. I think you have to play through in the single player to unlock it for co-op play.
Yeah.
At least for the full up to six players thing. I'm not 100% sure because I had not played it in co-op. So. They have, they're returning to Muckingham for the campaign, but also going to have a few other locations like Sponge Valley, Power Falls, and Lubra City. Yeah. So there's that.
And you can absolutely, absolutely guarantee that the very last level that you do in this game is going to be a giant pain in the ass to clean.
Yeah.
Because, that pyramid at the very end of that last one, that one took me like 2 days to finish.
Yeah. It was pretty fun.
Oh, it was an amazingly fun game, but...
Especially the notion of what that whole area was.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, holy crap. They found this thing. Okay.
Yeah. Also, giving you the false sense of false idea that, hey, power washing can be fun. No, it isn't. It's really not.
It's more fun in digital space.
Yeah, it's more fun. The idea is more fun than the actual practice.
There's no negative outcome to it.
Yeah, like, you realize the guy you're playing is, like, covered up in this, like, this whole suit with, like, a mask and everything. There's a reason for that. When you're doing, like, hardcore power washing, it's not just hot water. There's some caustic chemicals that go into it as well.
Yeah. And the pressure that thing shoots at can destroy ground if you're not careful.
It can also destroy your wrist. Seriously, yeah. Like you ever operated like a leaf blower and like you're like trying to blow the leaves off of your driveway or something like that, and then after you put it down, you feel like your hand has been infested by like a family of bees. Yeah, that's basically what power washing feels like, except you're handling something that could very easily blind you if you accidentally have it squirt into your eyes.
Yeah. So they also mentioned here they're going to have more washers and attachments and such.
Yep.
And the soap especially is going to be a bit of a better implementation here.
Thank goodness.
It actually clings to the walls and essentially acts as like a corrosive kind of soapy substance.
Yeah.
Of sorts. So I imagine they're going to have specific kinds of dirt that will require special attention versus the first game where it's just like, well, if you spend the time, you can clean it with just basic water. There's no real negative, reasons for doing that unless you just want to buy the soap to just make it a little bit easier.
Yeah. Also make the highlight feature just a little bit more obvious.
Oh, they've done that since then.
I'm glad.
Because you can set the color to one of like eight different colors now.
Yeah, good. Because
so it's not just yellow and
that like high. It's like it's no longer that like high resolution yellow orangish color.
Yeah, where you're just like, well, this area you're cleaning is also yellow. So,
well,
okay, I'll have to see what changes it slightly.
Yeah,
you can. I have it set to red, I think, right now. So it's like, all right, this works out perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
For most of the areas I'm working on. So yeah, that's seems like they're doing a bit more challenge to it, mm-hmm. and all that, which I think is a good thing to do. So yeah, that is that's pretty fun, and yeah, looking forward to seeing when this comes out. Hopefully out in the summer. I would like that to have it be a thing that I can play, maybe in like July or August.
Mm-hmm.
But the games are coming out, and that game can have its own time in the summer when I don't want to be outside.
Mm-hmm.
I can go inside, play a game where I'm outside cleaning stuff.
Mm.
So, yeah. There you go. That'll be out later this year, and it's self-published, too, so
mm-hmm.
no more Square Enix taking a chunk of the cash there for that. So,
yeah.
But that is a game that when Square Enix picked it up, it was their number two best-selling game mm-hmm. of that period, right behind Final Fantasy XIV.
Yep, because just for some reason that game is getting like a big thing of bubble wrap. It's just the simple little. Makes your obsessive compulsive little brain happy.
Yeah, maybe the one negative I have about it is I wish you could not have to wash off the graffiti Because a lot of that is actual good art.
Yeah.
And it's like, what if we don't have to clean this off, or at least let me clean it off and then leave it in a state where it's still on there or something. Yeah.
Doesn't that game have like a photography feature though, or something?
Not that I know of.
Not yet, then, at least.
Yeah.
I was thinking if you had that, then that would sort of eliminate the problem, but...
Yeah, there's no photo mode in it yet. Maybe they'll add it in this one. Seems like they're doing a lot of work on improving on things that were not well-designed in the original game. Like, the economy is broken at a certain point.
Yep.
Because, essentially, you just keep earning money for doing things, so... it makes sense in the course of the campaign, but once you get through the campaign, you've bought everything, at least all the attachments and such, and then you have nothing else to spend it on other than like cosmetic stuff, and then you can't spend any of it because I have $16,000 at this point playing all the DLC and all that, and it's like, yeah, this money is just Monopoly money at this point. It doesn't serve a purpose, so. I guess why they're adding the home base, so you can buy stuff for that, and probably have more attachments and such, so that you know you have a reason to be earning all this money, versus just being a way to tell how big the maps are. If you got jobs that are much higher value than the others, and it's like, well, this one's got to be some huge place.
Oh yeah,
and it almost always is.
Yep.
So yeah, there you go. That'll be out later this year. We got some more stuff that got announced from Humble Games as part of their showcase. They announced a narrative-driven cooking action RPG, Town of Zaz.
Yep.
This is from Studio Pixano.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is their first game. They're in L.A. But yeah, this will be on everything, PlayStation 5, Xbox, Switch, and PC. No date for it yet, but it looks pretty neat.
Oh, yeah, this definitely looks really neat.
Got a bit of maybe a Studio Ghibli kind of art style to it.
Yeah, it's got that sort of combo of, like, 3D environments and 2D character art. Well, actually, no, I think it's all 3D. It's just that the character models are sort of animated in such a way that it looks 2D.
Yeah, they're cel-shaded, and the world kind of has a very... lively character to it.
Mm-hmm.
They like Studio Ghibli locations had.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this looks really nice, so looking forward to it, but probably not going to be out for another year or two at least. So, but that'll be one to keep an eye on. The other game that got announced is Wild Blue.
Yep.
Also being published by Humble Games, but being worked on by Chuhai Labs, the developers that made Cursed to Golf, also with the help of Star Fox programmer Giles Goddard.
And if you look at it, it's like, yep, that's straight up just Star Fox 64.
Yeah, it's a modern Star Fox style, like on rail shooter kind of thing with it. And, you know, very much the anthropomorphic animal characters piling these ships. So. That looks like that could be a pretty fun one. And much like Tower of Zaz, this also doesn't have a date on it yet.
Nope.
Seems to be just for PC at the moment, but yeah. Looking forward to seeing that. And then the last known announcement here is Warhammer 40,000 Space Marine 3 got announced. Not too surprising. That last game did pretty well.
It did. It was one of my top 10 of last year.
As Warhammer people are want to do, they got a sequel made and are working on a new one. So,
yep.
Yeah, we'll probably have to wait a few more years for this, but there you go. More more dudes to shoot as a Space Marine.
Yep.
At some point, so there you go. Yeah, the last game here that got announced is a bit of a weird announcement.
Yeah, this one is
whatever's
so
list
strange.
Of ZAUM announced a genre defining espionage RPG called Project C4. And it's very much like, wait, who the hell is making this?
I mean, if you looked on it on the surface, it's like, I mean, yeah, it's very reminiscent of like the crazy sort of art direction of Disco Elysium. But here's the thing. Pretty much all the people that did the work on Disco Elysium have long since left Zaum.
Yeah, there's three other studios formed with people from the original team, and it's like, okay, wait, who's still left? Because it seems very much like they're not outing themselves. It's like, well, we're, you know, this person's still here. Mm-hmm. Somehow they're the only one that didn't get turned off from everything that happened after that game released.
Yeah.
The other weird thing is they had a weird announcement where they're like, we're making a mobile version of Disco Elysium for yep. the TikTokers.
Yep.
And people are like, wait, what the fuck? They redid the whole game to be kind of a visual novel of sorts, which it already was kind of that, but
yeah,
it's also like, I guess is the way you could go, but also yeah. making it seem like people wouldn't bother with the kind of game that Disco Elysium was on a phone.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's even like put another layer of stranger on this. We mentioned though that, you know, a bunch of other studios branched off from Zaum after they left that studio. And they all like announced, and like two of them announced games on the very same day that this was announced, which is yeah. just weird, like a weird ass coincidence.
Yeah.
Which is making me think that somebody who's still in Zaum is like probably leaking information to like some of the former developers, and they're kind of trying to sort of come out on top of the of Zaum's thunder just to sort of spite them. It's the weirdest thing, seriously. Yeah. And as for like Robert Kurvitz, the guy who's like the actual brains behind Disco Elysium, he's basically off doing whatever right now. So
yeah, it's like Disco Elysium was like the perfect anti, you know, establishment game, mm-hmm. and then destroyed everything that it took to make that game.
Yeah,
the teamwork they had and all that, so just like went up in smoke as soon as people started making money off of this game.
Yeah,
and it's like, boy, this somehow is commentary on what it takes to even make this kind of game,
and somehow weirdly thematically appropriate as well.
Yeah,
because like that's like half of Disco Elysium itself is about shit like that. And yeah, it's just, it's one of those weird little stories, man. I mean, I hope it ends up being good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know that most of the OG Zaum guys are gone, but I'd at least hope the ones who are working there are going to try and do something good with it.
Yeah, we'll see. This, the way they're announcing this, it seems like it's still going to be a few years off.
Yeah,
at least so. That's gonna be a while to see, like, what the hell came of all this chaos.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. That's your last of your announcements for this week.
Yep.
We do have some more stuff still. There was a Silent Hill transmission showcase that was mainly centered around Silent Hill F.
Mm-hmm.
As we got our first trailer for that game to see like what it is, because it's. It's a lot of interesting talent working on this game. People that worked on a number of like visual novels and such of notes that have been given like the green light to work on a Silent Hill game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's weird. And unlike the way Konami has worked for most of the last like 10, 15 years,
mm-hmm.
At least with Silent Hill stuff. And so, yeah, this is a game set in Japan, a Japanese town.
Obviously.
Ebisu Gaoka,
mm-hmm.
In 1960s Japan, that it gets consumed by a sudden fog, transforming Shimizu Hinako's hometown into a haunting nightmare. Mm-hmm. So very much like they've turned a Japanese town into a Silent Hill town.
Which I'm surprised they haven't tried to do before, honestly. Like, with the Silent Hill license, you would think that would be something that would be it would be like, yeah, that'd be like a natural outgrowth of the franchise, but here we are.
Yeah. Because they mostly focused on American towns and that. But yeah, this looks neat. Yeah, the script writer is Ryukishi 07.
Yeah, the guy behind Higurashi When They Cry. Yeah. Actually, the whole When They Cry franchise in general.
Yeah. They got creature and character designer Kara, who's worked on I don't know if they mentioned what she's worked on before, but is a big fan of the Silent Hill game, so is doing some fun stuff there. Akira Yamaoka is back to do soundtrack stuff. As well as Kensuke Inage, who's another notable composer, but I don't think has worked on the series before. I could check. They don't really mention too much about what they've done before. This guy's done a bunch of Dynasty Warrior stuff. Okay. Worked on Tekken 8, Samurai Showdown, Star Fox Guard, Dynasty Warriors, Gundam, Warriors Orochi. A bunch of stuff like that. Okay. Worked on Yakuza 0. Wrote some songs for that. Okay, he wrote Friday Night on Yakuza 0. Okay, he's good. I think he's more of a rock music composer, so I'm imagining you're going to have more rock music in this.
I can dig it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a neat looking thing, and yeah, there's a trailer and all that for that, so. Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how people take to it. And I do give a heads up here in a bit of info about like content warnings that it contains depictions of gender discrimination, child abuse, bullying, drug-induced hallucinations, torture, and graphic violence.
I mean, it wouldn't be a Silent Hill game without it.
Yeah, though it's kind of set, since it's set in Japan, it can also says it contains depictions based on the customs and culture of that time.
Yeah.
That'd be like post-World War II Japan, which is an interesting period.
Oh, yeah. That whole, the period, like, immediately after the war, you know, the bomb drops and the war ends is really fascinating because you're essentially having this whole country essentially having to rebuild its entire existence from scratch. Basically having to, like, restart a brand new government, get a new constitution, all these people having to just rebuild their lives. And that's not even counting like all the soldiers who came home and the reception they got when they came back. If you ever look it up, there was this widespread issue in Japan of returning soldiers getting like ostracized by like their families and their neighbors because they were considered to be cowards because they didn't die for the glory of the empire on the battlefield, stuff like that.
Yeah, like Godzilla Minus One.
Yep.
I will say, I was just thinking about this, and there is your Japanese Silent Hill. It's called Siren.
I stand corrected.
Yeah, from the person that made Silent Hill, or directed it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. Yeah, that'll be out at some point, but people can at least see what it is and be like, oh, this looks actually pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, it's got Ryukishi 07 as the writer, and I mean, his work has never failed me, so
yeah, there you go. Let's see here, we got some games that have done well. One being Split Fiction that just came out about a week or so ago. And they have Hazelight and EA have announced that it has sold 2 million units in just 1 week. Which is very good. Very good start for that game.
Yep.
Much like It Takes Two, that did very well. Ended up, like, it's at least like 21, 22 million units sold, which is incredible for that kind of game.
For a co-op game, especially.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking like a multiplayer shooter type. I mean, like, literally a co-op game where, you know, you have to have two people to actually play it. Yeah. That in and of itself is pretty incredible.
It does make me wonder how many people bought it and didn't realize it was co-op only. that kind of weird situation. I'd be like, oh, I got to find somebody now because I spent $40 on this game.
Mm-hmm.
So Split Fiction doing very well. So
very good.
Great to see.
I'm glad.
Speaking of games that have done very well, Final Fantasy Pixel Remaster series has reached 5 million copies sold total.
Yep.
That is very cool. I think the last number we saw was 2 million.
Mm-hmm.
About a year and a half ago. I think when that just started getting released. So that is great. Should sell more, but that's because Square Enix is selling it for like a whole package for $75 for six games, which is not an unreasonable price for how much you're getting there, but also it's very silly to sell old games for $75, considering how many packages of a bunch of old games are selling for much less.
Mm-hmm.
But they are going on sale here and there, so that is a chance for getting that for a good bit cheaper. They also mentioned the total sales for the Final Fantasy series has surpassed 200 million units, which is also good, but also there's 200 games at least in the Final Fantasy series, so there you go. At least some good news from Square Enix, where they're like, hey, we need to brag about sales for once.
Yeah. Of
being disappointed by them.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. That's good to see.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's get to the unfortunate news of the week.
Yep, here we go.
So Niantic Labs has sold their games business to Scopely, which doesn't sound nefarious on its face unless you
until you find out who owns it.
Yeah, so this Scopely is owned by, I think they're owned by Savvy Games, which is the sort of gaming investment branch of the Saudi Investment Fund.
Yep.
Which is run by the Saudi Crown Prince.
Mm-hmm.
Pokemon Go and the handful of other games I guess they own, Pikmin Bloom, Niantic Wayfarer, Monster Hunter Now, and what is this, Niantic Campfire, are all owned by the Saudis now.
Yep.
So that is great for everybody that was enjoying those.
That is just peachy.
They sold it for $3.5 billion. With an additional $350 million of cash from Niantic being distributed as part of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're selling the teams with them. So the games will still keep getting worked on, but now for a brutal dictatorship who make most of that money off of there. So
yeah,
that is going to make those games a little bit less fun for me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that is unfortunate. Seems like very much the people running Niantic Labs basically selling off while the getting's good.
Yeah.
Because they've definitely tried to make more Pokemon Go's based on various brands.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they had a Harry Potter one that just did not go anywhere.
Nope.
As well as some others that have not done super well, and they're just basically being like, well, we can sell these all for, you know, $3.5 billion and move on with our lives. Maybe start a new company or something, or do something else. That is, I guess part of this, Niantic will spin off its geospatial artificial intelligence business into a new company called Niantic Spatial, as they can make money off of their AI shit there. It has funded with $250 million of capital, including $200 from Niantic's balance sheet and a $50 million investment from Scopely. So they're investing into that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Are they getting the rights to the name Niantic as well?
I'm guessing maybe. So.
If they're just going to name the new thing. I don't know. Seems like the people at the top are making bank off of this, and everybody else gets told to go deal with it. But if they don't want to work for the Saudis, so. That's great.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's your one punch of bad news. We'll go for the second punch.
Mm-hmm.
Xbox is bringing Copilot to the Xbox.
Oh, wonderful. Just peachy.
The AI program that people have been very annoyed by on Windows
is
now coming over to Xbox. In fact, I should probably check. They usually try and reinstall it again after I delete it. from the apps on here. Though I have a Windows 10, they've made a version for Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
But I never see it outside of when I look at the list of programs that are running here. It's going to take a little bit to propagate amongst everything else here, but it usually tries to show back up and nope, it hasn't installed itself. There's Cortana, but that's 16 kilobytes. It's not an actual program there. Like, it wants me to download the rest of it, but they're bringing Copilot for Gaming, as they're calling it, to the Xbox, what they're calling the Ultimate Gaming Sidekick, that helps players get to play faster, sharpen skills with expert coaching, and enjoy a more social gaming experience. They talk about this on their Xbox podcast, which is fun. Let's see, what's the details here? Xbox insiders can get an early preview of on mobile soon. This AI-driven sidekick is designed to be your personalized gaming companion, helping you get to your favorite games faster, coaching you to improve your skills, and connecting you better with your friends and communities. Assuming you don't just Google to find out like why you're stuck on this area, like what you need to do. And Copilot for Gaming is built on three principles: capability, adaptability, and personalization. It is designed to assist players in various ways, from personalized game recommendations and seamless game setup to helpful coaching and maintaining connections with friends. What the fuck is that? They also emphasize that the player remains in control, deciding how and when to interact with the Copilot. Turn that enhances rather than disrupts the gaming experience. Let's see. One of the primary problems they're highlighting here is time management, to help players spend less time on tasks, searching, downloading, updating, more time on what they love, playing games. All of it is one goal: to help you get to play first. Whether it's connecting players with games they're likely to enjoy, or reminding you where you left off on an old favorite. Copilot for Gaming is set to make gaming with Xbox more seamless and personalized. And it's like, how is it going to know the state your game is in? Like, is it able to read save files? Is it getting information from the game about where it's at? Is it analyzing the screen and figuring out like what's going on? It's weird, and it's one of the images here shows it asking if you wanted to pull up a quick strategy guide, which must mean that it scrapes the internet for, you know, guides that IGN and other sites make, and presumably do its own version of Control F to pull up where you might be at. I wonder how much it pulls up video guides on that shit, because that's a number one annoyance on Googling stuff. So it's obviously probably stealing guide stuff from other sites, and they don't get any of the hits or ad revenue or anything from that. It's all kind of that weird kind of shit where it's like, yeah, but why isn't it faster for just me to pull up my phone and Google the thing for a guide for the area I'm in, kind of stuff? Because they make it seem like this is going to be faster, and it's like, how is it faster, especially if I have to type in this shit? All that kind of stuff. They do seem like they have a phone version of this for the Xbox app, I assume. Which just more seems like pulling up recommendations for games and letting you install it from there. Which is like, you can do that now. You don't need this to do that. As we've said before, it's a solution in search of a problem. Where it's like, I kind of see what they're trying to solve. There's a Minecraft screenshot here of like person saying, okay, I've got some wood. What do I do with that? And it's like, buddy, Minecraft tells you how to do things like it pretty easily. That's kind of the annoying thing, is it tells you that by default, all the things you can make with what you have. It's like the AI is like, craft the oak logs into wooden planks by opening your inventory, placing the logs in the crafting area. This like text covering a good chunk of the screen. So we're kind of in that same problem back in the Xbox One launch, where they had the like split screen kind of thing going on, where it's like, oh, you can have the game running in like 2/3 of the screen, and on this side have like a video playing, or Googling something, or you know, might have a manual that the game provides for that kind of thing. But the ability to switch back and forth is kind of nebulous and all that. So,
yep.
Yeah. Xbox just wants to make that work somehow, and AI is their next opportunity to make people give a shit about this.
Because that's what the tech industry has just sunk so much money into right now, and they've ended up in turn losing so much money on it that it's the sunk cost fallacy. It's like, look, we've put so much of our cash into this thing that we've got to make it work somehow.
Yeah. And it solves such milquetoast problems that you can easily do more easily if you have a phone or a laptop that you can do quick searches on in a more simple way versus however the hell you pull up this thing to actually use it. Because it's not like they're adding a new button on the Xbox controller. But I'm sure they're going to find a way to make do with that. It's much like when they added the ability to take screenshots, and it was like, You gotta hold down the home screen button and hit this, and then that'll take a screenshot. And it's like, this is much harder than if you just had a button like it did on PS4, kind of stuff. So yeah, there's your new innovative Xbox idea for getting AI onto your Xbox. I assume that'll be available for everyone by the end of the year. So yeah, enjoy. But yeah. We'll talk. We'll finish up with our last story here for something that's not happening this year. It's BlizzCon, because they have taken a break from BlizzCon for the past couple of years because they were getting acquired by Microsoft, and so that's unnecessary expenses on a big convention that was going to be wrapped up in, you know, the red tape of an acquisition from one of the biggest companies in the world. I know that this seems to have been solved for the time being, and so they're bringing BlizzCon back for 2026. So they mentioned, they confirmed that BlizzCon will not be returning in 2025 after skipping last year in 2024. The usually yearly multi-day event started in 2005. Usually doing things most years, but obviously the pandemic has thrown that into a bit of a... a bad place of trying to figure out when that makes sense. But yeah, it seems like they will return in September of 2026. And to elevate this iconic celebration, as they call it.
Yeah.
Let's see, it'll be happening September 12th and 13th. They're not putting tickets on sale yet. But means they must have some things to announce for then. We'll see what that could be. Because, they've been kind of, after Diablo 4 release, they've been kind of in a holding pattern of sorts. Just like, we're adding more stuff to Diablo 4 and Overwatch 2 and World of Warcraft and all this.
They're also kind of in recovery mode. Like, let's be completely honest here. Because... their last two, like, major releases, like, they did really well, but it was with diminishing returns, and now they're trying to essentially reorient themselves. And also kind of save their kind of shattered reputation.
Because I think the only thing that's been doing extremely well for them is WoW. That has rebounded in a pretty good way. Well, I think their most recent expansion being the most popular one yet, which is a great achievement for a game that's over 20 years old at this point. I'd be curious to see like what the focus will be on here for announcements and such. That's at least something positive that they are in a good enough shape to at least be able to hold a convention here next year. We'll have to see how that goes, but that's I think gonna do it for the show this week.
Yeah.
Unless you have anything else to add, Brandon?
Nope.
Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, Brandon, for joining. We'll be back with a new slate of news and things to talk about as we'll be heading into almost the end of the month.
Yeah.
I think we got one more podcast after this.
Yeah.
Because March just keeps going on. But
yep.
Yeah, thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back with news and such. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know they should check it out and select strangers that are hoping things are better for next year. Because, boy, it's
not great. God, I hope so. Yeah. So far, we're only a couple of months into 2025, and it already sucks ass.
Yeah. It's a whole thing. But yeah, we'll see you all next week. And yeah, I think Assassin's Creed is out next week.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they're going to hit this date considering it's next week. Copies that were aiming to be out last month already broke out.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been spoilers out there. Just watch out for that. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.